All right, the book is From Struggle to Strength. It is out. It is ready to go. Harry Passeris is the author. Harry, what's up, my man?
How you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, it's funny. We've talked on and off, text on and off for a week or so. You're one of these guys. It's like, I feel like maybe we were college roommates. You've kind of got that. You're that type A. You bring it. You know what I mean? And you're just one of those guys. So I've really been looking forward to this.
You know, anyone that knows me, I'm a dynamic, hardcore, over-caffeinated type A. And when I talk to you on the phone, I'm like, I think I met my twin. So yeah, I can agree with you on that.
Yeah. When you said you were into football, I was like, oh yeah, no, I don't buy it. How could he ever be into football? Yeah, right. No, you've got that football mentality. All right. Well, listen, here's the book. And I just want to launch with this. I'll throw the punch. Why? I think this is so cool. I've interviewed a lot of authors. I've read a lot of books. A book about autism, being a father, raising an autistic son. Why the boxing gloves?
This is an awesome question, and no one really started with this. So anyways, my book is From Struggle to Strength, A Father's Journey with Autism and the Power of Hope and Positivity. You can't miss it with the gold boxing gloves. What I wanted to do, we have a very difficult journey when we are raising children on the spectrum. And when I was writing the book, half of it is my son's story, and the other half is about mindset. I wanted to bring the warrior's mindset into this book. This is probably not your traditional book on autism. I wouldn't call it soft because I wanted to wake up fathers that were really dismissing or not working with their wives when it came to the diagnosis. But I have both boxed and I have multiple black belts in Aikido and in Tung Sudo. And I wanted to bring that warrior mentality into raising a child. And I don't mean that in a harsh way, because the overall themes in my book are hope, positivity, and they're both on the cover, on top of grit and resilience. And the point being, when you're in the middle of a fight, and I'm going to get my Tung Sudo fight stance here properly, and if I were to put my guard down, I'm going to get popped in the face or I'm going to get dropped. And the point being, when you have a child on the spectrum, you have to wake up every single day with the determination to make them a better human being, improve. And I talk about it in my book, the 2% rule, getting them 2% better every day. Think of it as atomic habits on steroids. But you have to have that zeal, the desire every day to get up on top of a positive attitude to really make them the best person that they can be. And I want to note, you and I both know this, I'm not talking about quote unquote curing them. There's no cure for autism. You accept your child for who they are, but every single day you look for improvement, and those improvements lead to greater improvements and eventually exponential improvements. So that's kind of the whole point. So I bring a little bit of grit to the book, and it's done so on purpose.
Yeah. And I think you do hit the mark, and there is there's an element, for whatever reason, of softness. There's probably a better word out there, but you know, I've talked to so many parents overall, but fathers, and about a year in, they all say the same thing. You know, I've gained weight, I'm tired, I've lost motivation, I don't see my friends anymore. And I was in a bit of a fog as well, so I understand it, but I always ask why. Like, what, you know, you become really the most important person, because your child is going to now need you beyond the word need could ever be explained. Also, I realize now why we get along so well. So black belt, Tung Sudo, I'm a brown belt. I know. Why did I stop at the brown belt and Tung Sudo? Why? You know, so you'll be my motivation to go across the finish line.
There we go.
Yeah. So we've both studied that martial art. You talk about the 2% rule. I thought it was one of the chapter, I believe it's chapter 4 in your book, that's really good. And you talk about your son, Gus, the Home Depot and everything. What can somebody do? Just, you know, we've got a big audience. There's inevitably fathers that are going, okay, what can I get out of this? Give somebody an example that they can do like tonight or tomorrow morning to start the 2% rule. Like give one change that you can give somebody. They've gotten the diagnosis for their child. They're confused. They're stressed out. Maybe their marriage is, you know, confused and kind of in disarray. Give somebody an idea of what the 2% could look like in real life, in their real life.
Sure. And I want to note right off the bat, because I do a lot of speaking locally here in the Pittsburgh area, a lot of fundraisers, things like that. I've had people come up to me and go, wait a minute. Your child's on the mild end. Mine is more moderate to severe. It doesn't apply. And I'm like, no. There's, you need to be a little bit blunt. You can't think myopically. A win is a win is a win. So that could be waking up regardless of where they're at on the spectrum. So I'll give you my example for my son. For the longest time, he was eating, and I discussed this in the book, the beige diet, and all of us are used to this, chicken nugget after chicken nugget. It could be a social interaction. It could be something like an activity of daily living. Are they properly brushing their teeth, or what are they doing? You're going to hear an interaction with his brother. There's something either correctable or something you could teach every single day. And it's a small win, but these small wins build on top of another. So I would wake up with a mentality, and we'll talk about the whole optimism side of it too, because I think that's important. But I would wake up on a daily basis and go, what is he working on today? What have the therapists been working on? And we're going to enhance that. And we're going to check on it the next day to make sure it's solidified in his head. I mean, it might seem very minor. And I left this off in the book because people would go, wow, that's nothing. But he was doted on. Like we were in that nebulous when he was first diagnosed. And if he needed socks, I'd run up the steps and get socks and things like that. And then one day I looked at him and I said, you're going to go up the steps. You're going to go to your bottom closet. You're going to pick out the socks and come down. And I just waited. And it seems like a nothing burger. But at the time, I have to understand how big this was. I hear the thumping all the way up the steps. And he was fiddling around and he came down. And it didn't matter to me that they were the wrong color. He had them in his hand. He did something on his own without drifting off. And he understood that, you know, and little things like that. So from there, I extended that to, you know what, Gus, you're going to pick out your outfit and we're going to start kind of getting dressed. And we did things like that. The beige diet was another thing. Let's introduce this new food today. Is there a sensory issue here? Can he do it? And I joke around in my book. And if you read my book, he ended up falling in love with sushi. You know, I was told this kid would never enjoy a multitude of different flavors. And he's a sushi fan to this day, but it's about finding that daily win and compounding them and getting that improvement on a daily basis. And doing so as a parent with a positive attitude, because the last thing your child needs at all, if you want them to progress, is negativity.
Give me your low point during this whole journey. When did it get dark for you? And maybe it didn't, and that's fine. But I kind of always talk to people and they said, oh, no, there was always a moment.
Oh, no, there was a moment. So what I want your listeners to understand, my son is on the spectrum. My son has Tourette syndrome. My son has no hearing, in his right ear. So you have an advantage. It's called a right ear advantage. So he's processing things slower. So he has three strikes against him, and he has primary ciliary dyskinesia, which affects his lungs. I will tell you this. I withstood the blow, what I would say, of autism. On the way back from the Cleveland Clinic, and this is documented in my book, I went hardcore Mike Tyson midway through. I thought I'm against the ropes in a fighting analogy, and I've been getting hit. And it's time to hit back because I'm going to make this kid the best he could be. Then I misunderstood. I heard him constantly verbalizing something. I thought, man, it's an autistic stim. And it wasn't. We realized it was Tourette's, had to go back, all of these specialists, everything else. So this kid was constantly with the doctors. But somehow Gus fooled the school system for like a 2 to 3 year period with his hearing. When my wife called me and said, you won't believe this, Gus has no auditory nerve. He has no hearing in his right ear. It was the I document this in the book. It was a straw that broke the camel's back. I had to cancel an appointment with a client. I pulled over and I had the most cathartic meltdown cry you can imagine. I think it was all of that tension building up. And I sat back in my car and I'm Greek Orthodox. I mean, here's my cross, you know, but I think it's very important to have sometimes a discussion with your maker. And I asked God, like, why? Like, why? You know, I understand one thing, but why all of these things building up in one kid? But I'll say this. My son, as our, you know, your son and anyone that has a child on the spectrum, they're a gift from God, and God chose you for a reason. These children aren't broke. They're special, and you're meant to help them. If God came down today and said, out of all the ailments I gave him, what would you take away? Most people think I would rip away the autism. And I would say, absolutely not. I would give my son his hearing. I wouldn't change a minute. I wouldn't change anything. There's a section in the book where, and I'll explain why, but I talk about the Ted Lasso effect. And the reason I touched on that too, I wanted to extract all of the things that Gus has taught me, because Gus is a beacon of light and a beacon of positivity. I think the world would be a better place. They possessed a lot of his characteristics. So when he lost his hearing, that was it for me. I just needed, you know, and I will tell you, and I write about it, even that night, I was teary-eyed. I walked into his room and I wanted to give him the dad pep talk. And I said, listen, buddy, dad's going to be here forever. I love you. And I know you don't have hearing in your right ear. And he stopped. He goes, dad, I can hear you. He goes, yeah, it's in one ear, but I can hear you. I hear everything you're saying. What are you upset about? And I thought, wow, you know, talk about handling in a positive manner. You know, it really calmed me down. But yeah, that was probably easily my lowest point in the entire journey.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's good that you brought that up, because I think what a lot of people don't realize is they hear autism. I know I made that mistake. I heard autism, but I didn't hear global developmental delay. I didn't hear self-injuring behavior. You know, there was all these other things that came with it. And as you said, and in many ways, some of those things are more challenging on their own at times, than some of the, you know, characteristics of autism. How old is Gus now?
Gus is 20 years old, and he is a sophomore at Kent State University.
Okay. So, and you know, so I bring that up. Everybody always wants to know, like, you know, the book is about you, but obviously you wouldn't be this version of you without Gus. And so you really have that perspective of, you know, Gus being born, pre-diagnosis, diagnosis, and then, you know, young adult, teenager, and now here we are, college student, which that in itself I know is going to bring people some hope. And I love hearing that. You know, he's a college student at a great college. You know, that gives me hope for my son. My son is, you know, only six, so I am a lot more immature in the journey than you are. But I love hearing that. But I just wanted to give some context for people that you've been through all the stages of childhood and being a teenager, or your son being a teenager. So I like that, because I think the book is very well developed, how you structure the timeline. Talk about, so, you know, I really like you bring this fighter mentality, maybe for a lack of a better term, to the book, hence the boxing gloves. I'd like to wonder if this also made you a better non-special needs parent. Did this activate some other things? I always say, for Cal, I have to be a great special needs parent. For my other children who are neurotypical, I've got to be like a really bad special needs parent and give them the things that they're looking for. Did this also hone your skills in being a dad in other areas?
Absolutely. And I think this extends down to my wife, who's amazing, and my son as well. And I think what it does, what it taught me as a parent, and I stress this, it's stressed all over in my book, is it really taught me empathy, taught me positivity, really taught me how to connect on a better level. When communicating with Gus, my oldest son, you know, you had to be a little more empathetic. You kind of had to talk to him in a different way. Gus didn't tolerate well if you were ever angry, or he could sense the angst if you were angry or if you were being demonstrative. And you know, I've been in sales. I've taken read multiple books and taken classes on communication. And really what it taught me is that, you know, negativity, frustration, yelling, even if you're having a bad day, it's all toxicity. It's caustic. So what it taught me with my youngest son, and my youngest son committed to play football next year at Allegheny College here in Meadville, Pennsylvania, nearby. And Max is an edgy jock. But even then, I rarely blow up at either now. You know what I mean? It's taught me to converse with them on a softer level, one-on-one, and ascertain their opinion and shut my mouth and listen more. You know, I've been a better listener. So, and I will say this too, I talk about it, you know, siblings matter. Max is 5'9" and a half. He's built like a pit bull. You know, he's deadlifting over 400 pounds. He's a strong kid. But the beauty of Max is you have brawn, and you have what his brother has taught him. And Max is a far more empathetic kid, sensitive kid. He's willing to protect anyone he sees getting made fun of or picked on, you know? And it's a beautiful mix now. I don't know if he would have had that if it wasn't for his brother. So Gus has taught us a lot of lessons. But in terms of parenting, he's really taught me to stay positive, listen more, and be and just communicate on a more empathetic, gentle level.
Yeah, can I agree with you on the communication? It's made me a much better communicator. And trying to not so much really understand the other person, but understand myself and the point that I'm trying to get across. And I think, you know, what I think is effective. And I'm it's funny, my former career of being on the radio, I would have been so much better at it had Cal been born earlier, because I was really able to learn a lot of skills about communications and about myself and what I was trying to explain. We talked about the 2% rule. I really like that. I think that's something that it's realistic, right? It's not one of these aspects of the book where someone's like, listen, you know, you want to lose weight, don't eat for 60 days. Okay, well, that's, you know, good luck. You're probably right, but I don't know if you'll get there. This is a very, this is something very doable. But I do want to talk about optimism, because help me understand how you've been able to be so optimistic. You have a successful career. You're in great shape. You obviously prioritize your health. Give me something from the book, you know, about being optimistic and how that ties all together. Everybody says be optimistic, but when you have these challenges and you know all the challenges in having an autistic son, and really any child with special needs. But give me something about the optimism, how you were able to kind of orchestrate that, or it be the focus of your mind.
So, let me emphatically state. And this is a product of growing up around, my parents are amazing. My brother, Michael, is a both international and national philanthropist. They have bred in us a optimistic, positive gene. I don't know. It's in our DNA. But I was talking about setting the tone in your household, and I'll explain this, the ripple effect. And I thought, as I was writing this, my fear was someone would go, wait a minute. This guy's not a psychologist. So this is all a bunch of psychobabble. So what I honed in on, I wanted to touch on in one of the chapters, was the Ted Lasso effect. It was a masterclass. It became a national and international phenomenon. And the reason I honed on that show, it changed the way people were leaders. It changed the way people were coaches. I've seen this on the football field and in the dojo, quite frankly. And it's most of all, it changed the way people were parents. And it was proof that if you bring optimism and positivity and you set that tone, and instead of berating and screaming and communicating on a humanistic level, everyone is elevated. So if you think it's funny, if you go back to the TV show, not only was AFC Richmond, the coach that he, excuse me, the team that he was coaching, elevated, the community was elevated. So as a parent of a special needs child, in particular autism, when you wake up in the morning, if you want to wake up angry, ticked off, berating people, screaming, you've set the tone for failure that day or maybe moving forward. I don't do that. So what I'm trying to encourage parents to do is you wake up every day. And if you wake up with the Ted Lasso effect, you wake up with optimism, positivity, that permeates to your spouse. That permeates to your kids, in particular your child, let's face it, who has a struggle on a daily basis. But they're going to be willing to make that fight and make that 2% improvement on a daily basis with someone that's a cheerleader as opposed to a dictator. So I think it's very important to stress that. Now, I'll add in, you mentioned this, there, and I'm probably going to expand in a second book on this. I am adamant about exercising and clean eating. Part of being optimistic and being able to recharge your battery is taking care of yourself. If you as a parent are eating clean, therefore your child is eating clean. And if your child's on the spectrum, neurologically, I assure you, that's going to help them 100% more. Second of all, you need to move on some, I'm adamant about this, is my wife and I would trade off. I would go for either running, I'm adamant on, I do kettlebell, steel club, steel mace. I go hit the heavy bag. My wife, she does yoga. She loves to read. You need to recharge your battery and be the best version of yourself. And I'm not talking about leaving for 3 hours. It could be a half hour. It could be 15 minutes. Whatever it might be, you need to plan that a little bit into your day if you can. And even if it's, like I said, even if it's 15 minutes to meditate, recharge your battery and be the best version of yourself. If you were eating right, and you were exercising, You're setting the best example for your child. And right now, I read the latest statistics. 50% of children on the spectrum are obese. I see too much vegetation where they sit in front of a screen and just play games or do something. Get them outside. Get them for a hike. Maybe run with them a little bit. There's something you could do to get their bodies to move too, to optimize who they are as a human being. So a lot of that is reflective in my book. I have to tell you, I'm so adamant about it, though. I struggled with one chapter, and I think I'd like to expand that into a second book one day, whenever the time comes.
So that's the physical aspect of it. But like you said, it does affect the mental aspect of it. I mean, I try to get a workout in every day because for me, it helps me more the 6 inches between my ears than my body, really. But what about, you know, because you do come from, you know, this is a father's journey, and the book is available now on Amazon, From Struggle to Strength. You cannot miss the yellow boxing gloves. But what about just being a guy? What about being a dude? Do you make the time to go have a beer with your buddies and talk football? I mean, I think that there's something to be said. Is that something that you are able to do and kind of unwind, or does that not check boxes for you?
You know, it was a little more difficult initially when they were younger and we were really in the thick of things when he had not improved to where Gus is at right now. What I did do, you know, I always had University of Pittsburgh sports. I'm considered one of the top sports influencers, University of Pittsburgh. If you go on Twitter, I'm at Pitt Guru. That was like a great outlet because you would run into a lot of your buddies and you were kind of working at the same time. You would run into them as he's improved and he's better. What's beautiful now is a lot of our big group of friends, we're all together on a regular basis. And Gus is part of that. So I get a chance to sit down and have a bourbon with my buddies, knowing that Gus is probably within that group of families and having a blast at the same time. So it's I will tell you, though, I'm not going to lie, that was a little bit more difficult initially. And that wasn't a priority at the time for me. Like my friends knew when we were in the thick of it, it wasn't as easy to get together. That's been a little alleviated as he's older and a little more independent now.
What's your biggest fear moving forward for Gus? I mean, here he is in college, but I just can't imagine a place where the fears one day end. Maybe I'm wrong. Like I said, I'm only 3 years into this, but what's a fear that you have?
I don't want Gus. It's a great, great question. And I thought about this. Let me say this. The last 2 years in high school, Gus had a 3.8 GPA. He had a group of friends. He drove to school. I don't want to make it sound like it was all La La Land, but Michelle and I were high-fiving each other. Gus gets to college. He struggled a bit academically, socially. It's been a reminder that life is going to be a marathon and not a journey. So it hasn't been perfect. I don't want him to be alone. So I am big on vision boards. I just am. Gus was home over the weekend. We have mapped out everything. We're going to get our degree. He has a secondary degree. He's eyeballing. He wants a Ram truck. He's going to get that. We're going to get him the biggest, baddest Ram truck. And then we're going to get him a job. And then I want to help him find a spouse. And it might sound insane. We literally have mapped all that out because the worst fear that I have is that the kid's coming home, that he's a young man now, coming home alone, even after a job one day, and he's just by himself. I want him to find someone special. I know actually two friends of ours that have children on this, adults, young adults on the spectrum, that recently got engaged, and that gave me a lot of hope. And he's such a great, loving, trusting, caring young man that I think it's definitely doable. And I'm going to help him. I will be there every step of the way. People may think it's crazy hearing that, but we literally map all of that out. We do it on a regular basis. But my greatest, greatest fear, I want him to find someone special. I don't want him to be alone.
Did you ever think that he, you know, you mentioned in high school, driving to school, and I mean, were these things at one time that you just were like, no way this stuff's going to happen? I mean, you really thought that, you know, because like where I am now with my son, and I have to just be honest, you know, my assumption is he'll live at home the rest of his life. Now, I say that I'm trying to trick myself like, oh, I know it's not going to happen, but I'm going to say it to prepare myself. Were you ever at a point where I don't think Gus will get he may not go to high school. Did he just manage to blow your mind year after year?
Well, he did. But I don't talk about any modality other than one. And I guess I might as well mention because it's in the book. We were really unsure early in high school if he was college material. You know, my thought was maybe we go the blue collar route, maybe find a trade. Like I didn't know what to do. We were questioning it. And that's always a fear. Then, again, I said this, there's no prescriptive how-to guide. All these children are different. What we discovered here in Pittsburgh was the Brain Balance Institute. And I am a huge advocate for neuroplasticity. You can retrain your brain. You can rewire your brain, excuse me. And Gus walked in. I call it the autistic fog. He was into cars. He would point at cars and look around. And they had given him a series of questions to fill out. And his writing was large, infantile, made no sense. 12 weeks later, after brain balance therapy, and it's based on the works of Dr. Robert Malello. He wrote Disconnected Kids and Reconnected Kids, or two books that he wrote. They brought Michelle and I in, and we looked at the same questions. Age-appropriate writing. He was with it. He was with us, as opposed to being in the autistic fog. And his answers made sense. And I said, this can't be the same kid. I was astonished. I want to make a note. You know, every modality is different for every child. Gus responded to this. We were in tears. It just went from 0 to 100. I was amazed at where it took him. We had teachers coming to us going, what did you do? Like, he seems like a different kid. So immediately we plunked down money for two more semesters. And it was a game changer for us. It worked for my child. So what I make sure to state that in the book, no, you know, every modality varies for every child. It worked for us. And that was a game changer. And we felt very strongly heading into his junior year that he could go to school and go to college.
How old was he when he was diagnosed?
3.
Okay. So yeah, same as my son. You guys were on it. Who pushed for that more? You, your wife, or was it equal?
No. My wife is a badass. My wife's the hero in this. And I have a public apology in the book because now I've been on it hard. The second we got the diagnosis, I was on board. But I say this all the time, and you and I just said it. We're both type A's. I could have fun at an insurance seminar. You know, I will go into a room and light it up. I am high energy. So my thought was, no way does my son have anything that's going to impair him socially. It was our first child. I thought, okay, maybe he's an introvert because my wife's a lot more quiet than I am. And, you know, she kept saying something's off. And he finally, we had two birthday parties back to back where he was easily the outlier. And in the second one, Miss Josie, who is our preschool teacher, kind of pulled Michelle aside and she saw tears welling up in Michelle's eyes and said, listen, I've been wanting to talk to you. I love you. You need to know, I think he might be on the spectrum. So that was kind of a game changer. And once we got the diagnosis at the Cleveland Clinic, that's when the light switched for me. And I told my wife, I'm really sorry. I've been belligerent, pigheaded. She was a warrior. She saw it from the get-go. She's been a warrior ever since. I talk about it in the book. I just talk about brain balance. By the time Michelle was done, she drove over 8,000 miles going from our house here to the middle of Pittsburgh, and which is now they closed that one. There's a closer one in Wexford, Pennsylvania, but over 8,000 miles going back and forth to brain balance for our son. And my favorite pages in the book on pages 33 and 34, Michelle and I love the movies Kill Bill. She doesn't like a lot of violent movies, but she loves that series. And I think the reason she loves it, my wife is Uma Thurman, the bride, in that movie. She's a blonde badass. I think a modern day Valkyrie can see another one, and where Uma, you know, cut up people with a sword, you know, Michelle accomplished everything with just unrelenting love. So Michelle was the hero and had to kind of kick me around until I was on board, and that's kind of a big point of the book is I wanted. There's a reason this book, and I've been told, by the way, thank God, it's under 150 pages. It's not a pamphlet, but it's not War and Peace. And it's specifically that length. And I wanted the boxing gloves on there for a reason. I wanted a dad that was in my shoes, that was being belligerent, to go, all right, I'll read it. It's a quick 1 day, 2 day read, but it's done intentionally because I wanted to break through that male it, that ego, to kind of break through. And if I could just get through to 10% of those dads, 20%, I think I've done my job.
Yeah, it's I'd say it's an easy read, but everybody says it's an easy read. It is a very casual read. Like I just find myself going, yeah, geez, I've been in that. So, you know, I go back to the Home Depot situation because I've been in that in a million different stores in that situation. Really, really good. From Struggle to Strength. It is available now on Amazon real quick. And I always say, you know, I'm going to talk to you for 15 minutes and here we are over 30 minutes and I'm sorry, but you're an engaging guy. And I think you have a lot to offer. I wish this book was around 3 years ago. I really do, because, I think there was that time of, and like I said, I call it the autistic dad fog, the autism dad fog, where I just, you know, I was there. I wasn't paralyzed. I wasn't, you know, sleeping under a bed, but it was foggy. I was moving slow. I was like asking the same questions in my mind over and over for days. And I'm like, God, why do you keep asking yourselves the same questions? Just go, go, go. But it was just a little foggy. You have some great reviews on the book. Give me the review that hit you and you're like, wow, I like that. Thank you. What was the review that you got where you read and you go, sometimes I've talked to authors and they say, yeah, sometimes the reviews actually talk to the author because the author's so locked in on creating the book and thinking about their experiences, but then somebody else articulates it from a different point of view. And I'm wondering if something kind of grabbed you in one of the reviews you got.
You know, so I'm very fortunate. We launched today and I think there's like 25 four-star reviews right now on Amazon, which pleases me to no end. But I have many, many, many Pitt fans that follow me, 30 years of a following. So I had one of them message me and said, you know, and I purchased an early copy of your book. And my wife and I decided, apparently in our neighborhood, they had a child that was just diagnosed. And we wanted to learn something about autism. And he went on this diatribe on just that they never knew the times, like it taught them not to judge everyone. If you see a panicked parent. You and I talked about the Home Depot situation. If you read my book, you'll know about that. Here's me putting hours into my son, but I'm having to put him up over my shoulder to get out of Home Depot and people think I'm a bad dad. It was so impactful because I specifically thought, okay, this will be for a belligerent dad, newly diagnosed parent, battle-tested parent. I forgot people that just want to learn about autism. And he wrote me the most beautiful DM. I'm going to frame it. That came through on Twitter or X and just that said, you opened our eyes. We're now open to the situation, more sensitive to the situation. We're going to be less judgmental in public. And I thought, wow, that's a demographic I never expected. And it meant, I got choked up. It meant so much to me. And it was one of the first, by the way, I'm new to the book game. So I didn't even know the book was available. So I thought you couldn't get it till today. So he'd already read the book, which that blew my mind. Yeah. But to think that this guy out of nowhere read that much into it and he and his wife got benefit, you know, were benefiting from it and said, I think I need to pass this on to a few other people where it's going to help and recommend it. That was awesome. It blew my mind. There's some beautiful reviews up right now, but that DM meant so much to me. I couldn't believe it.
That's really good and very nice of that person to do that and to take the time and consume what you're writing, what you're communicating and really think about it, you know, in their own life. So before we wrap up, you know, somebody's listening to this, many people listening and many people hopefully will buy, they're on their way to buy it from Struggle to Strength. It's on Amazon right now. Give them something going into the book. Not necessarily a perspective. I don't, you know, people can think what they want to think or go into it, but maybe give them something as they're going to get the book, something to think about, whether it's from you, your story, and something for them to kind of guide them as they're going through the process of getting the book.
I'm going to go that direction, maybe a little bit different direction. I'm going to say this. You said you're what, 3 years in, right?
Yep.
As you and I have just talked for now 34 minutes, okay? Thousands of kids, for all we know, could be diagnosed. Those parents are in a fog. Those parents are in that proverbial fog, that depression that you and I went through. I tell my kids every day, in the game of life, you either sit on the bench or you play in the game. And I want my sons, both of them, to be MVPs and to help others. My saying is if you're breathing air, you should be helping others. So when you go into this, do I want it to help you? Absolutely. When you're done, take the knowledge you've learned and help others. In Greek, we call it philotimo. It's called the Greek secret. There's no proper definition, but it's good for the sake of doing good knowing that it has a ripple effect on the rest of the world, and you ask nothing from anyone else when that happens. My ask is you go tackle this book, ascertain anything you want from it, but for God's sake, don't sit on your ass at home. Go and help others. If there's a crying call, a battle cry that I could give you, go and help others. If you're battle tested like you and I are right now, there's someone out there right now we can help that needs our help. Make sure to do that. So that's my ask. I'm going to switch it up a little on your question, but I hope that's okay. You know, go and make an impact. You have one life to live, and legacy to me is everything. Think about your legacy. Don't go home and just sit on the couch. Get involved. There's probably organizations for autism in your community. Get involved and help people.
Those are good words. From Struggle to Strength, the book is out now on Amazon. Harry, you're a great guy. You're a guy's guy. And I'm glad, I'm appreciative of your vulnerable story. And I also just appreciate, you know, from where you come from, for a lot of dads where, you know, it was interesting to me in the beginning. I kind of was like, I don't really fit in this lifestyle. This isn't for me. And then I thought to myself, well, that's a weird way to think. You know, this is my son. This is life now. This is life. And so I just appreciate where you come from. I appreciate the background. And, you know, I hope more people are inspired by your book to tell their story, no matter what perspective they come from. But you can always relate to somebody, you know, and somebody can always relate to you. And so I appreciate you putting this out there. And it's going to be a lot of fun for the community. From Struggle to Strength, it is out now on Amazon. I appreciate you, Harry.
Thank you so much for having me, and let's riff another time too. Have me on, man. It's been a lot of fun.